listen, Merrick, this is not a political podcast, so we're not going to get into the issues of the day, although I think we both want to send extreme condolences to the families in Connecticut dealing with what they're dealing with as we do the show today.
As,
such a,
as parents, tragedy. As parents, which both of us are, Greg, I can't wrap my mind around it. I can't wrap my mind around that level of tragedy. I mean, I'm going to pick up TJ at daycare right after the podcast is done, and I'm going to squeeze that MF for like I never have before.
Well, the other thing is, by the way, the last time you ever used that phrase, were you talking about your stick? You can be honest. the point being is that you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens media-wise during a tragedy, and I think that one of the things as a hockey writer, a U.S.-based hockey writer, that happens is you realize that every Canadian that you know on Twitter, or have a Twitter relationship with, follow on Twitter, has a lot to say about American culture when it comes to guns,
when it comes to guns,
politics, when it comes to things that we don't do in this nation and conversations we don't have. As I said to somebody earlier today, my entire Twitter feed became one giant Canadian making Bob Costas references, I think, at one point this afternoon. But the thing that you did before the show, we were talking about this this atrocity today, and we got to address this. I think it's important as an American and as a Canadian to try to bridge this gap.
What gap?
You guys always go right to the burning down of the White House thing.
You want to describe how the conversation actually went to the people that are listening right now? The conversation, folks, went something like this. We're talking about gun control, and we said, you know what? It's a tricky concept, and
it can't be solved in
140 characters on Twitter. And I said, well, speaking as a Canadian, you know, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around how accepting another country, specifically one that's as close to us here in Canada, how they can embrace gun culture, considering how, you know, much like the Japanese, Canadians kind of look at guns like it's disgusting. Like they're disgusted by the presence of weapons. And Greg quips, well, that's why you're so easy to conquer. To which I came back with, hold on a second. You want to rewind back to when we torched the White House? And which country has the United States never beaten in war?
We were talking about a sports metaphor.
I'm so dumb.
The War of 1812. Yes. Occupation of Washington.
The torching.
The only time since the Revolutionary War that a foreign power captured and occupied the United States Capitol, I believe.
You guys
always go there. It's like your nuclear option. It's like when you hit the button. It's like the certification. How do we come back from that? It's like, oh, you guys are easy to conquer. Oh, you guys are way too polite. Oh, yeah? We burned down the White House. How about that, MF-er?
I could have gone World War II with you. How come it took you guys so long to get involved? Thank you very much. Where was the nations of the willing at that point? No, it was Canada.
That's like one of my favorite things from A Fish Called Wanda. Was the end where what's his face? Michael Palin is trying to get under Kevin Kline's skin. As Kevin Kline is it's like that scene at the airport, and Palin goes directly to Vietnam, and he's like, yeah, they whipped your butt real good in Vietnam. And Kevin Kline's like, no, they didn't. It was a tie.
I don't know. The only thing I can remember from watching Fish Called Wanda was when John Cleese put the goldfish bowl, no, the picture right over his junk when he was caught naked towards the end of the movie.
Hey, by the way, not to get off on a tangent here, but we probably should.
Already have.
I was listening to the Opie and Anthony show this morning, as I wanted to do, because I enjoy the program on the Sirius Satellite Radio, or Sirius XM, whatever they're calling it these days. And they had a conversation about Monty Python. Is it true that Monty Python, post-Python, the individuals in that group funnier than when they were together in Python? Or is Monty Python always going to be funnier than anything that John Cleese or Eric Idle or Michael Palin did afterwards?
Monty Python at the time, like when they were Monty Python, was probably the funniest thing on the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of people, I mean, it's like comparing hockey players from the 50s and say, oh, look at Maurice Richard. Yeah, well, you know what? Dan Hynote a couple of years ago was probably better than Maurice Richard. But that's just because of, you know, evolution of, you know, technology, training, hockey players itself. And through the evolution of comedy, we look back at Monty Python and say, well, given the, you know, the nature of comedy now and what we consider funny, I guess Python was kind of cute. But at the time, that's really revolutionary stuff. But the thing that really stands up for me, the one piece of comedy brilliance that I can still watch any day of the week, and I think there are only 12 episodes of them produced. Dude, I can watch Fawlty Towers till the day I die. Just watch like all 12 episodes on a loop, and I will laugh like it's the first time watching it. So yes, I would argue that post-Python, they're actually funnier than as an ensemble.
See, I think my dad's a huge Python fan, and and I saw a lot of Python growing up. Like the Lumberjack song was a very big influence on me as a young lad. But I think my first introduction to that type of humor was probably through Terry Gilliam movies, was probably through like Time Bandits, for example, versus anything else. Like I think Time Bandits, for a guy my age, I'm 35, for a guy like my age, I think Time Bandits might have been the first time I was introduced to that sort of absurdist humor. And then through that, I got into Flying Circus and that kind of thing. I don't know. I go back and forth. I think the Python stuff, it's very much of its time. But at the same time, there are certain things that are timeless, you know, and I think
Philosopher's Drinking Song. Philosopher's Drinking Song, for example, will always stand up. That one to the end of time will stand up for me.
The Dead Parrot sketch doesn't stand up all that well.
No, nope.
But there are some
a
things
lot of
that
stuff doesn't.
Do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Like they were hit and miss.
But it's so funny to think that like back. Those guys are still killing it in some ways. Like Eric Idle showed up on the closing ceremonies.
Oh,
it was like one of the greatest highlights of the closing ceremonies.
Dude, that was the highlight for me.
That was the
closing ceremonies. That was it. I loved the closing ceremonies in London. I thought they were fantastic. I remember because I was in Beijing in 2008 and I thought, man, London, you have your work cut out for you. Because not only was the opening fantastic, but that closing in Beijing was spectacular.
Yeah.
But I love what London did with it. You know what? Don't try to compete with Beijing on that level. Just be yourself. You know, here, you know, we define ourselves with music. Here are some great musicians that we've produced. And you know what? We're not shy to take the piss out of ourselves.
Yeah.
That's why Idol works so perfectly.
It's so, and you bring up the closing ceremonies. Watching that Sandy benefit this week on HBO is pretty much like watching the closing ceremonies. Like every old British musician was there at the Sandy concert in MSG, except for, why does Zeppelin, like Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, why do they always never get invited to these things? And why doesn't Bowie ever show up to one of these things? Like those are the two acts that, for me, would make any show like that over the top awesome. I mean, granted, it's awesome anyway. You got the Stones, you got the Who, you got Clapton, McCartney, obviously, who actually was fantastic with Nirvana. Did you see that clip yet?
Yeah, I know.
I did.
I was shocked because when I first heard about it, I'm like, really? Captain Button Down? Like, I love Beatles, Paul McCartney. I love, you know, Paul McCartney and Wings. I love Paul. What's not to love about Paul McCartney? I'm sure Paul McCartney just wanted to take the gig because he's so sick of playing Hey Jude. Everywhere he goes, oh God, do I have to play Hey Jude again? Yes, you do. Okay. I think he was just happy that he didn't have, that he actually went and was able to go on stage and didn't have to play Hey Jude. He would do anything. Nirvana,
all
of it. You know why?
Shredded it. Oh, and Helter Skelter, he shredded too. Oh, it's awesome.
Talk to musicians. This guy is as close to a genius as possible. Plays every instrument, and his sense of timing and rhythm, musicians will always tell you, is almost peerless. The way that this guy can keep time, with any instrument is fantastic. And he just happens to write some of the best tunes of all time.
Well, you know, the Sandy thing, I'm so happy they raised a bunch of dough, and there's still so many friggin' people that are hurting in Jersey and New York. But you know, the Sandy thing, when that happened, and it's the same thing today, it's like, it's very hard to be a new media guy during a tragedy. It really is sometimes. It's just like, everybody's on their high horse, everybody pumps in their politics, and then it all comes back to this, Merrick. And I'm as guilty of it as anybody today. It all comes back to sports simply don't matter at a time like this. Well, obviously, and I'll say I'm guilty of it today because I didn't do Jersey Fouls. I couldn't finish it. My heart wasn't in it. I can't be Jokey McJokerson when this crap happens and you have like a 3-year-old kid. But you know, it's
hey,
like,
listen, wish. This, hang on. This podcast Because Mark Cole did a couple of new intros for us, and I was listening to him beforehand. Yeah. And the one bit of exit music off of one of the intros was things. Do the Russians love their children too? I thought, you know what? Not today. Not today on this podcast. Can't do it. Just can't do
but
it.
But
Mark, I swear those intros are great. We'll play them on the podcast. They're fantastic. But that one just, and it's like he wrote these like last week, obviously.
But it kind of brings it back to the whole delicate balancing act between what we do as sports journalists or sports personalities or whatever you want to call it, and what happens in the rest of life. And I think that going back to the Costas thing, which I think is going to be revisited a lot in the next couple of days. It's still a political rant on a sports show, granted about an issue that affected the sport, but I'm still a separatist when it comes to that, man. I'm still separationist of sports and life
in a lot of ways. But that one was within the sport at least there was a link there.
But you know, I was watching Christine Brennan from USA Today on one of the cable chat shows over the weekend, and she said that that sports isn't escapism anymore. Like, there's no separating real life from sports anymore.
Okay,
I just don't believe that.
Okay,
I believe that for reporters that need to have that element in sports in order to stay engaged because they simply have lost any passion for covering the day to day. Escapist, fanciful bullshit of stats and stuff. But I don't believe that, you know, the essence of sports, which is a distraction, which is entertainment, I don't believe that that's disappeared just because we choose to use it as a filter and a prism for everything else that happens in life.
Let me ask you this question.
Please.
If the Hartford Whalers were still in the NHL and they were scheduled to play a game tonight.
Mm. They probably wouldn't.
I wonder if the Connecticut Whale are playing tonight.
That's a good question.
Are they? I'm checking.
But do you agree with that though? Like, I don't think the Whalers would play.
No, I don't think they would play. No, yeah. I think there'd be too much of an outcry not to. And you know what? Probably not fair to ask those players. Either or management or anyone really. I mean, that's a time right now where Connecticut's in mourning, and I don't think it's a time to play hockey. The CT Whale are playing tonight at 7 o'clock against Albany.
Really?
At home.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if we could have somebody call during that to see if the game's still on. I haven't seen anything from them that says the game is not on.
No, but, let me just go to news here.
Anyways, I don't know. It's a weird day, man. We got a cool thing happen on the show today, though.
Yeah, I know, extraordinarily weird day.
We got PK Subban joining us, your new buddy.
Pretty sweet, eh?
Your new TV buddy.
And we'll be working together this evening as the Victoria Royals travel to Red Deer to face off against the Rebels. 9:30 Eastern is the start time.
I feel left out,
this
man.
This evening, 6:30 Pacific. What do you mean? What do you mean
I feel left out. I mean, you guys are like tight.
Oh, yeah, we hang. Hard. Yeah, no, we sit there
so
on
got
the
PK
set.
We got PK coming to the show today, and then we have Game Show Friday as well. And the Game Show Friday will be themed to our guest. That's all I'll say about that. Question of the day, by the way, because I know there's a lot of people in our audience that love them some PK Subban, and a few of them that probably hate him.
And they all live in Boston, and they're conflicted because Boston drafted his brother, Malcolm, from the Belleville Bulls.
Hey, listen, don't talk to me about conflicted high Stefan Matteau's son. Question of the day, what do you like most about PK Subban? Tweet it at Wyszynski at Jeff Merrick. Email us puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com. What is it?
Got some good ones. Got some good ones too, eh?
Did you think a lot of them.
Well, yeah. Let's see. Ryan Parfrey. The swagger. A lot of people don't like it, but I think every team needs someone who plays like this. Okay. I agree.
That's a great point. At the other end of the spectrum, we have things like that Subban rhymes with soup can. From Murray
soup
Campbell.
Can. you're only allowed to be nicknamed Soup or Soupy if your last name is Campbell. That's the hockey standard.
Yeah, it's true. And this is also from Tony, I think it's Grease,
or Grease, was it? I like the way I call him Soup Can so that I feel superior to him.
So I feel superior to him.
And James Higgins writes in his inability to take on Marchand. See, again, it's a very sort of delicate balancing act between, you know, compliments and criticisms.
Hey, listen, Jackie B brings up a great one. One of my favorite hockey moments from last year was Subban rocking Larson with a clean hit and then both fist bumping in respect afterwards.
Nice.
That's a pretty sweet moment. At a certain point today, I want to talk about how PK Subban hits because it is kind of controversial, but I would maintain that it's a lot safer than a lot of the other body checks that we see out there. Although it does, and some people don't like it. But
for example, this is from a Bruins fan. I like how he brings the vegetastic component of flopping into the game. I always say to myself, man, if only hockey players would embarrass themselves and the sport like soccer players, that'd be the bee's knees. And here we have a guy that does that. Thanks, PK Subban. Sincerely, a Bruins fan. Again, this is why I love hockey. The Bruins have Brad Marchand on their team.
I know.
Brad Marchand. Just received a 9.1 from the Russian judge, if you know what I'm saying.
I just keep saying this, physician, heal thyself. Physician, heal thyself. Like, the Bruins, I love me some Boston Bruins hockey, but there are mirrors in that dressing room, right, Wish?
All right, with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Everything else just sounds like...
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
It's a brand new podcast.
Debate hockey.
I don't touch salmon at all.
That's refreshing.
Pop culture.
I can dig it. Can you dig it?
And more hockey.
I fought a Rottweiler and you got blocked by Ryan Whitney.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start the show proper, shall we? Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. We got lots to cover today. We got lots to cover today, actually. Including kind of a thing that we were going to make question of the day, but we decided not to because I think it's kind of hard to sort of make it the question of the day. But Merrick brought up an interesting point this morning when we were chatting. Which group of players do you think are most prepared for the coming season? And I say coming season because I am an eternal optimist about us playing hockey this year, even if the union is getting towards decertification. Is it the players in the KHL? Is it the players over in Sweden? Is it the players in Germany? The Swiss players? Is it the players that aren't playing at all, like the Pittsburgh Penguins guys that are just practicing every day? Or is it the players in, say, like the American Hockey League, such as Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, your captain of the Canadian junior team that will be defeated in a few weeks? All these guys, what? All these players.
You going to Lambert on me already?
By the way, I had the best compliment this morning from somebody who said that they read Lambert's piece on the blog and they can no longer read it without hearing my impression
of him. Oh, I saw that, yeah.
But what say you? Which group of players do you think has it the best right now?
I think it's the American League guys. I think it's the guys that play in the American Hockey League. Yep, whose game most simulates what a National Hockey League game is. You know, most of these guys in the American League could probably play in the NHL. Most of them, some of them do. Half of that Oklahoma City Barons squad plays with the Edmonton Oilers, for crying out loud. Whereas you look at players in Europe, and as I have been led to believe from players who have played there, it's a combination of let's just stay in some type of shape, but let's not take the game too seriously. You know what I mean? You know, we always get on European players where, oh, they go south when the playoffs start because there's no paychecks. And so they go south and they just want to get back home. I'm kind of getting the impression that that's how a lot of North American players are behaving in Europe right now. Just going to stay in shape, just going to get a paycheck, but I'm not going to take this too seriously. Tell you what, man, if it's a 48-game schedule, this NHL season hits the ground running. I want guys that have been running all season long. Those are the American League guys. Those are the AHL players. Now, not everyone could go to the American Hockey League. You know how Hall ended up there and Eberle ended up there and Nugent Hopkins and the like. But for me, it's the guys that got sent down to the American Hockey League or Wish, guys that are working out on their own, provided they have that, you know, high work ethic, and can still, you know, keep themselves in fantastic and NHL ready shape. I don't know that going to Europe is ultimately going. You know what I kind of liken it to? I kind of liken it to guys in the NHL that end up playing summer hockey, like no hit hockey in the summer, just with their buddies. Mm-hmm. You talk to these guys and they say, it was fun. I got to play with my buddies, but I picked up so many bad habits.
Yeah, well, that's the bad habits.
Bad habits.
Bad habits. I mean, listen, anyone who's watched a KHL game this year, I mean, you talk about picking up bad habits, like never dropping down to block a shot, never throwing a body. I mean, come on now, right?
Oh, yes. I think it's the AHL guys. I really do. Wish, where are you on that one?
I think it depends on the team. Like, for example, I like the fact that you have so many players from the Los Angeles Kings that have done nothing. Rest it up, go out there. You've got a few guys like Dustin Brown now, and obviously Kopitar has been playing forever, it seems like, in this lockout, that are playing, but you've got other guys that aren't. And I think that's okay. Now, I say that wondering, you know, what Mike Richards and Jeff Carter have been up to, but at the same time, I want to believe that it's a process in which this Kings team can come back and challenge for the Cup in a shortened season. And by the way, I mean, they're so loaded, dude, that we could be seeing a cup and a half for these guys in a
year's span. Oh, I think so.
Yeah, for sure.
And it looks like Jonathan Quick is going to go play in the Spengler Cup if the NHL lockout doesn't
end. The Egon end, so. Spengler Cup.
The what?
Egon Spengler from Ghostbusters.
Oh!
That's right.
I've actually seen that movie. Movie, Wish, that I've seen.
The media guides for the Spengler Cup are Tobin Spirit Guide. See, there's somebody out there that is really laughing hard right now, but it's not you, Eric. Joining us now on the line.
Yeah.
I understand.
From the Montreal
Canadiens. Used to play hockey, but now is gone over to the television side as a television personality, much like my good friend Jeff Merrick. He is PK Subban, and he joins us here on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. Hello, PK. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys? How are you, Jeff?
Doing well, man.
I'm doing great. Did you get your pizzas sorted out the other day, sir? I don't know if you're following PK on Twitter, but there was a little bit of a pizza dilemma on the set, but eventually PK did get fed. How was your pizza that late at night, PK?
It was fantastic. I don't think it was so much me that was upset. It was more Doug McClain. The whole panel was just upset. I mean, you know, we're there late. We work late nights. You know, we're doing our research, trying to give the viewers the most informative report on every intermission and post-game and pre-game. And, you know, we really needed that snack. And Doug McClain was ticked off because I guess he's on this diet where he can't eat after 10 o'clock. So getting pizza at 10:30, 11 really ticked him off. So I guess he felt that he put on a few extra pounds because he ate it a little bit late. But we were very happy to get the pizza, very happy.
That was the highlight
some kind of
our
gremlin,
evening,
I guess, is what he is. Hey, interesting.
Yes, perhaps.
Based on your experience, sir, more pampered NHL player, Canadian junior player, or Canadian television personality? Who is the most pampered of the three?
Sorry, I didn't hear that. Say that again.
The most pampered of a NHL player, a Canadian junior player, or a Canadian television personality? Who is the most pampered?
You know what? I gotta say World Juniors because, you know, NHL, you know, NHL's good. Sportsnet, they do pamper me pretty well at Sportsnet. I think that, you know, but it's still early. I gotta kind of wait and see what happens here if I'm doing this for the next couple months. But they treat me well there. But I gotta say World Juniors just because you're representing your whole country. So they, you know, when you put on that jersey, it's such an accomplishment and an achievement and an honor. You know, you get everything. They give you everything to bring home a gold medal. So that's why it's so tough as a player when you don't, if you don't get that gold medal, because they give you every opportunity to get it.
You know, I recall specifically, PK, the junior tournament that was in Ottawa, and you guys won gold. And there was Eugene Melnyk, the owner of the Ottawa Senators, of course, who was there to put the gold medals around all the kids' necks. What was Eugene like for you guys that tournament?
Oh, Eugene was fantastic. You know, I haven't met every single owner in the NHL. We got a great one in Jeff Molson in Montreal. He's fantastic. Larry Tannenbaum is awesome. I've met him a few times. But Eugene Melnyk is one of the nicest people, you know, I've met in my lifetime. Very genuine. The stuff that he did for our World Junior team, some of the stuff I can't even talk about, but he was so
giving. He was so engaged with the players and the team, and the fact that we were in his city in Ottawa, and he wanted to make it the best experience for us, and it was. It was truly the best experience I've ever had, and Eugene was a huge part of that.
We were talking before you hopped on the line about the locked out players in the National Hockey League, and which group of players might be the most prepared if there is a season. You got guys in Russia, you got guys in like Sweden and Switzerland, you got guys down in the AHL, and then you have guys that are just practicing hard. I mean, like the Pittsburgh Penguins guys, for example, are just been practicing hard, or we should say just practicing almost every day. What type of player do you think is best suited to dive into a season and get up to speed real quick?
Well, I think if you can get a couple games under your belt before the season starts, that definitely helps. There's no question about it, but that will help you. I mean, you know, if you can, you know, get into game speed, feel the puck, get your timing back, that stuff helps. But there's also an advantage to not playing games. You know, once the games start, you're even that much more hungry. You know what I mean? And I think that once you do get into game shape, now you can spark the fire and light it up and get going rather than playing games that really don't mean anything, you know? So, this is my first lockout. I guess it would be hard. I would have to, if you ask me this question after we get a CBA done and the season started and it's come and gone, then I could probably give you a better answer in terms of who has the advantage. But as of right now, I'm going to say I do. I'd like to think that what I'm doing right now is going to give me an advantage.
Well, who are you skating with? Who are you skating? Because you're skating all the time and you're working. I remember one of the first conversations, PK, that I had with you was about Sean Monahan. But who are some of the guys you're skating with now?
Actually, today we just got in a new group of players, actually. Today we added Chris Versteeg. Clark MacArthur was out there. Obviously, Phil Kessel was skating. Myself, Chris Campoli, John Mitchell, Daniel Winnick. Brad Boys, we had Steve Mason in net. We had Carlo Koliakovo. We had Wojtek Wolski out there. I mean, we had a lot of guys. We had a pretty good group. So it's not a bad skate. I mean, it's pretty good to be able to skate with those players, right? So it's a lot of fun, and I think it's beneficial to be out there skating with those guys. You're getting better.
Hey, speaking of skating during lockout, can you take us behind the scenes of the Operation Hat Trick benefit game in Atlantic City? And by that I mean, how much did you lose at the tables that night, PK?
You know what? I'm not a big gambler, to be honest with you. The only kind of thing that I'll do close to gambling is maybe a game we call Snarples on the plane, and that's usually $20 you put in the pot, and you know, you play a couple hands, and the game usually lasts about an hour, depending on. Unless someone gets a spade out, which is, you know, all the tricks in one game. But other than that, I don't spend any money at the casino. I can't handle it. You know, I think that the reason why, that being said, is I can't handle losing. So, I mean, I'd rather just not even get involved.
Do you play golf?
Every now and then, yeah, I go out there and I'll hit the ball around. Last summer, I probably golfed the most I've ever golfed. This summer, I haven't really had that much time, and which is kind of funny, but I've been training. I trained so much, I didn't have much time to go out and hit the course. But I know a guy like Stamkos golfs a lot. So, you know.
See, that's why I don't play golf. Like, I've got enough frustration in my life that I don't need to play golf and feel more frustrated about life playing golf and sucking at it. So I get you on the gambling front, man. Like, that's the reason I stay away from the links, is I can't deal with that level of failure 18 times in an afternoon.
Well, that's the first thing that happens when you step on the golf course, right? Is, okay, guys, what are we playing for? $100 a hole? I'm like, oh, my
yep.
God. Forget that. I'm not, you know what I mean? I'm not in this to lose money. You know what I mean? I want to enjoy the game, but you can't golf with anybody and just enjoy it. They always got to put money up. They always want to do this. I'm not a big gambler, so.
Greg mentioned the Operation Hat Trick, and you and Stamkos have a nice one coming up as well, PK. And this one at the old Maple Leaf Gardens, near and dear to all of our hearts in southwestern Ontario.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's great. I think myself and Steven, it's kind of, you know what? It's kind of funny that you know, myself and Steven are doing this. We've known each other since we were 7 years old. We've played hockey against each other, with each other. Our families know each other well. We have the same agent. So myself and Steven are pretty close. And we're both endorsed by Royal Bank, which was great. And they've been huge supporters, and in terms of helping the grassroots systems in hockey across not only Canada, but North America. And to see them and the NHLPA team up to help us put this thing together, it's great. I mean, you look at the tickets, they sold out within seconds. So, I mean, to be able to have that, we're extremely happy and privileged. And I know myself and Steven are looking forward to it. I spoke to a couple of the guys today that are coming to the game and involved, and guys are excited. So I'm very happy to be able to, only 2 years in the league, be able to put something like that together and get so many guys to support it. So I'm really happy.
Our question of the day to the listeners was, what do you like best about PK Subban? And I've noticed that a few of our listeners in the Boston area have chimed in with some, shall we say, sarcastic comments about you. And I can't help but wonder, PK, now that your brother is a member of the Bruins family, are you closer to the Bruins fans? Don't you think this should have mended some fences between you and the Bruins?
Well, I don't think they have a choice. They got to learn to like me now, because they're going to be seeing my brother, and they're going to probably be seeing a lot of me. So, you know, they got to get used to it now, and they got to get over it. They got to get over the game seven and the hand to the ear and giving the crowd and smiling and, you know, fighting at center ice and me razzing their players and doing all that fun stuff. They got to put all that aside, you know, because they got blood on their side now. They got my blood on their side. So I love it. I think it's great for the rivalry. And I always say this, the moment that people stop talking about you, you should be worried. So if they're still talking about me, they're still chirping me, that means I'm doing something right.
What's it like from your point of view as a defenseman when you're on the ice with Brad Marchand? When the Habs are playing the Bruins and Marchand's on the ice, when Subban is on the ice, describe that feeling or that 45 seconds.
It's intense. I mean, like I said, I've won a gold medal with Marshy. We played on the World Junior team together in Pardubice, Czech Republic. And, you know, like I said, off the ice, we're good friends. I mean, I don't speak to Marshy that often, but when you win a gold medal like that, it's just like, it's one of those bonds, you know what I mean? And we went through that. It was a great time. But now, obviously, playing on rivalry teams, it gets heated. I mean, I'm a competitor, and he's a competitor too, and it's fun. I mean, when he's on the ice, it's not like I go looking for him or he goes looking for me. We just play the game. And I like to have the puck on my stick, and he likes to forecheck. He's a forward. His job is to put pressure on me and try and make me make a mistake. My job is to try and knock him off the puck and make plays and accelerate the offense and defend well. So, you know, we're going to have a lot more battles down the stretch. Now, whether he's going to win those battles, that's another thing. You know what I mean? But we're going to have a lot of them.
Hey, last one for me, PK. You know, there's going to be a lot of talk about – I think we're going to have a season, personally. I'm just an optimist when it comes to this thing. So let's say we have a season.
Yeah, no, we will. We will. Guaranteed we will.
You think so?
Yeah, I guarantee. I think so. I just – I find it hard to believe that you lose the season on contracting rights and CBA length and contract percentage variances between years. And I just don't see us losing a season on that.
But when you say – like I say that because I don't think that the owners necessarily have an appetite to lose a season. Like I think they were all about it when they wanted a salary cap. I just don't think, like you said, the issues are that important to try to cancel a season this time. You kind of see it the same way?
Sorry, I didn't hear you there. Say that again.
That's okay. I said, I just don't think that compared to what we went through in 2005, like with the salary cap, like I just don't think that the issues this time are important enough to lose a season. And it seems like you kind of think
that's exactly my point, right? If we were sitting at this point now and trying to figure out, you know, still trying to work on, revenue and how we're going to split the pot and money issues, that's completely different, you know, because the money issues are important. But, you know, in terms of contracting rights, if you ask me for my honest opinion, those are the most important things to the players. Those are our rights. We lose contracting rights. We lose a lot more than just money. You know what I mean? We lose a lot of leverage on our side. So, you know, they're very important to us. You know, and I think that as players, those are tough things to move on. So, but at the end of the day, I don't think those are going to be deal breakers. I think that we're going to have a season based on the fact that we're going to be able to negotiate something on those things. When, I don't know, but I'd like to think that it'll happen for sure.
The last question for me is about the fans and the idea that, you know, the league and the players are both going to have to work some overtime to win some fans back to kind of soothe some of the bad feelings from the lockout. How willing do you think the players are to work with the NHL to do that? You know, like come out of the last lockout, everybody worked together, went the distance, made it so fans wanted to come back. Is there so much bitterness towards the league and Bettman that the players might be hesitant to try to go the extra mile to win fans back?
Well, I'm just saying this. When we started this whole negotiation, you think that when you negotiate a contract or you're in a negotiation, usually your first move is to set up yourself to ultimately maybe take a little bit less but get what you really want. That wasn't our approach. Our approach from the very start was to strike a deal that was fair for both sides. And that's why we moved so much at the beginning. We moved a lot. We gave up $1 billion. You know, that's a lot to give up. You know, that's a lot to give up. And we moved that early, that quickly, because we wanted to save the season. You know what I mean? And that's a big step for the players to take. That's a big step for us to take as a union, because what you're doing is you're actually opening the door for them to say, you know what, we're going to stick it to you. You know what I mean? If you want to start there, fine, we'll start there. But we're going to continue to get as much as we can. But, you know, you hope that that's not what this is about. You hope it's about getting the right deal that's going to be fair for both sides, you know. And I thought that when we started, we gave up a lot. We gave up a lot to try and get a deal done. And I think that's the disappointing part, you know, when you talk to all the players. That's the disappointing part now, is that because we gave up so much, we thought it would be enough to get a deal done, you know. And we really did try to do something that was going to make it fair, not only for us, but for both sides, and what we thought was fair. For us to go right away and get around the 50-50 area, that's huge for us to drop, you know? So, you know, it's a little bit disappointing that we're in this position right now, but I'm still optimistic and confident that something will get done.
PK, last one here, and we'll look forward to seeing you on set tonight, Victoria and Red Deer, 9:30 Eastern, Western Hockey League action on Friday Night Hockey. One of the things about your game that is controversial is the way you hit. I mean, it's a lot of the hip, and it's a lot of the back, and it's a lot of the butt as well. Describe why you hit that way as opposed to just dropping a shoulder into a guy.
Well, number one, I like my shoulder, and I kind of don't want to. I don't want to dislocate it. I don't want to destroy it. So I like to hit, and I like to hit often. And I think that you're not really helping yourself. If you look at a lot of the players, like I'm sure you look at a guy like Gary Roberts, who was an honest player, hard player, played honest, played hard, scary guy on the ice, hit so much he had to get surgery on both of his shoulders, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and ultimately that probably knocked a couple years off his career. So, I mean, for me, not only am I thinking about myself, but I'm also thinking about the other player. I mean, yeah, I wanna hit him, and I wanna give it to him good. But at the same token, with the amount of concussions that have been going around the game so far, I don't want to be that guy that ends somebody's career. You know, I don't want to be that guy that, you know, that you know, puts a guy out for 6 weeks or whatever, or 6 months even. You know, with these concussions, some guys, they take a while to come back, and I don't want to do that. You know, guys are making a living, and you want to play the game hard. You want to give yourself the best opportunity to be successful and win hockey games. But I think when you're hitting, you got to be so careful. And if you watch my hits, they're equally as impactful. They're just not as dangerous, I find.
PK Subban, you're a gentleman and a scholar, and you're fantastic on television, sir, here in the Sportsnet family. And we appreciate you joining us here
on the America vs. Jasinski podcast.
I'm getting better. I'm getting better. Kyprios is showing me the ropes. So from what I hear, that's a good thing. If Nick's showing me the ropes.
Does that mean you're going to wear a scarf on set tonight, PK? Is
no,
that what we're expecting tonight?
No, I definitely won't. Well, I'll have to talk to Nick about the scarf that he had on. You know, we had a big chuckle about that with the scarf. We weren't sure if maybe he forgot his collared shirt at home and didn't want anybody to see that he was wearing a T-shirt underneath his jacket on TV.
That's exactly
that was what it was. But
that's got to be it.
Inside the hotel during an interview, we're not sure about that. We got to go back and we got to talk to Nick about that seriously.
We'll have a talk when he comes back from New York. All right, we'll see you on set tonight, PK. Thanks for doing this, bud.
All right, thanks a lot, Jeff. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, take care. There you go. Pernell Carl, PK Subban of the Montreal Canadiens.
Now, listen, I'm an older gentleman. I don't necessarily hear all that well.
Yeah?
Did PK Subban guarantee we'll have a 2012-2013 season?
Yeah. I think he thinks like a lot of people. I think you're the same way. I can't see them scrubbing a season. A, when they're this close, and B, over these issues. Really? Like, did you see Myrtle's piece? Which, you know, linked that ESPN piece about the anonymous governor solving the lockout, everything sort of right down the middle from what they have right now. It just makes too much sense. It just makes too much. And I don't think...
That's why... basically what you're saying is that it's posturing at this point.
I think I've been consistent with this for the last little while. This to me looks like it's the last minute of play in the game. The NHL has pulled their goaltender, sending an extra attacker out just to see if they can get that extra goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're doing. Because right now, the deal is there and the NHL has the win. It's just a matter of, do they want to win by one goal or do they want to win by two? I think they're trying to squeeze as much as they can out of the Players Association here in the final stretch of all this. And it's up to the Players Association, you know, the ones that are shorthanded in this situation, to block shots and get the puck out of the zone.
Since we last had a show, I think the conversation has been about one thing, which is to try – two things, really. Today's vote of disclaimer, whatever the hell a friggin' thing is before the certification that the union
it's a disclaimer of interest.
On.
And what it is...
Disclaimer of interest, is that what it is?
Yeah, the NHL PA board is going to put to a vote of the Players Association the idea of disclaimer of interest. So not that they would automatically do it, but so that the executive board could use that trigger somewhere down the road. Give them the authority to do that.
The other thing that's been a big topic of conversation is does the NHL or does the NHL not have a date, a drop-dead date for the season? And Bill Daly told Nick Costa-Nica from Yahoo Sports they don't. They haven't considered it. But we all know that if you have Gary Bettman saying that if you have Gary Bettman saying that there has to be a suitable number of games to have an actual valid season, then you have to figure that date's the middle of January.
Yep, correct. He pretty much said that. That was the Elliot Friedman question at that press conference when a very frustrated Gary Bettman said, well, what do we have in 94-95? 48 games? So that to me would seem like a credible season. I think that was the tip off that, okay, that's what we're looking at here. And everyone puts two and two together and says, okay, middle of January. Stanley Cup handed out. When they handed out night, when did your Devils win the Cup in 95? Was it June 24th or 25th?
It was the 24th. It was on my parents' anniversary, so I think it's the 24th.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Doesn't make me a bad son. Doesn't make me a bad son to not know my parents' anniversary.
Yeah, it kind of does. Yeah,
No, it doesn't. No, I've always been, this is the thing with that, because my mom used to give me shit for not, like, giving them an anniversary card. That's your thing, man. It's not my thing. Like, I'll give you a birthday card, Christmas card. Whatever. Like, an anniversary is a thing for couples. It ain't for me. Now, granted, coupling...
You're kind of the offspring of
I'm the byproduct of that coupling.
Yeah, like, if it wasn't for that coupling, it would be... versus... Merrick versus what?
Merrick versus a twinkle
Lambert.
In my mom's eye.
Leahy. Mooney.
Merrick versus Lambert. I'd pay to hear that, actually. No, but
Junior
you know,
time.
It's,
we should, it's like, hang on it's a like, second.
Oh, he's coming on for juniors. Don't worry. He's coming on.
Okay, good. All right, good. Yeah. All right, good.
It's their holiday. It's their the couple. I'm happy that they got together. I'm here because of it. But at the same time, it's like, I, you know, It's like egotism to think I should celebrate their coupling. It's a very private thing.
Can I ask you a question right now? Who are you trying to convince? Me or yourself?
Probably myself.
It sounds like you're trying to convince yourself that you're not a bad son.
Can you do a German accent and say, "Tell me about your childhood, Gregory"?
Try to put your head back. Get up on the couch.
How great was Subban, man? I was just going to ask him about the fans, man, but I didn't realize we were going to get powder keg NHLPA talking points there. Has he been in the talks? I'm trying to remember if he's like
he was initially.
Yeah.
In some of the initial ones, yeah, he was very much front and center. But I think now he's mainly just concentrating on working out, staying in shape, and stealing jobs at Sportsnet.
hey, you know, I couldn't help but notice he put Eugene Melnyk over pretty well, huh?
Oh, you think he's going to the Sens?
No, I don't think he's going to the Sens.
Here comes a conspiracy. Well, you know what? That junior tournament, I think that was 2010, Pat Quinn coached that one. Eugene Melnyk treated those kids like no other host has ever treated a collection of junior hockey players. Like the lavish gifts that all those kids got. Like I was told it was like a room full of like essentially kids' toys, whether it's like
women.
You know, Xbox.
Oh,
no, not women, like Xboxes and TVs and all that. Just like laid out, and I think every kid got to go in and pick two of whatever he wanted.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, just to put over one of the Yahoo sites, Buzzing the Net, our junior blog, will have coverage from Ufa in Russia.
Who's going?
Sanaya's going.
Oh, Sapergi. She's awesome. Good.
Yep.
Good.
She's awesome. So she'll be on site for Ufa, Buzzing the Net, your home for all the junior stuff you never see on Puck Day. We get emails. We're like, why don't you cover juniors? I'm like, because we've got all junior blog. It's like a whole, hey, why isn't the ice cream on the buffet? Well, that's because there's an ice cream store right next to where the Puck Daddy buffet place. There you go. That's the best way I can describe it. All right.
Very
we
nice. Got
to get to a Friday favorite right now, please.
It's game show Friday.
Joining us now on the line, we
do have to hustle too because these tie lines are going to be used top of the hour, so we got to boogie.
All right, we're going to boogie. Joining us now on the line, he is a guy from Toronto. His name is Joe Pack. He's a big fan of the show, and he believes that he's got the right stuff. Last week, Game Show Friday, not the best edition. This time, Joe Pack thinks he's going to step up to the plate, swing away, and get the mandatory 60%. That makes you a big wiener on Game Show Friday. Hello, Joe. What do you know?
Hello, boys. Thanks for the opportunity.
No problem.
Our pleasure. I have recused myself from Game Show Friday once again after the incident of last week, the events of last Friday. This is all about Quizmaster Wyszynski this week as I put myself back in the penalty box.
Yeah,
I think you got a good one here too, Wish.
Yeah. So as you know, PK Subban was on the show today. PK is what's his real name, Merrick? It's
Pernell Carl.
Yeah, Pernell Carl. So we wanted to make Game Show Friday a game show called Hockey Initially, and by that I mean we're going to give you 10 questions. The answer to each question is a player that is best known by having initials for their first name. You got it?
Like P.K. Subban. Gotcha.
Like P.K. Subban. All right, Joe, here we go.
Come on, Joe.
Gird your loins. And again, 60% is what we're looking for.
Thinking toque. Put your thinking toque on.
Put your thinking toque on. That's the one
Canadian.
You need right there.
It's Canadian. Come on.
Oh, wait, I've got to get it. Okay, I'm ready.
There you go.
You got your thinking toque? I hope you had a good intake of Timmy Hortons, and now you got your thinking toque on, and you're gonna fucking rock
ass.
The show.
You're an ass,
all right.
Wish.
And I know it. And listen, Wish, stop making fun of the Canadians, or we'll go down there and we'll burn down your White House again. This former Toronto Maple Leafs netminder won the Conn Smythe in a losing effort for the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim in 2003, much to the chagrin of Devils fans. Name this goaltender.
That would be J.S. Chiguer.
Correctamundo. Question two. This St. Louis Blues forward is known for his tenacious forechecking and party boy ways. Such is the life of a former Fighting Sioux. Name him.
I'm going to go with TJ Oshie.
You would be correct, sir. The question three, we're going to go dipping back into the porthole of time. This longtime Montreal Canadiens and Quebec Nordiques defenseman won 5 Stanley Cups with the Habs. His number three, this is from Wikipedia, by the way. His number three jersey was retired by the Nordiques after that season, just before the franchise's move into the NHL, thus gaining this player the distinction of being one of only 3 players to have a number retired by an NHL team without ever having actually played for it. Name this defenseman, former Hab.
Former Hab, played defense. I can only think of one, so I'm going to go with J.C. Trombley.
Dude is on. Wish these questions are easy. I just wanted to say that.
From Merrick's sarcasm, you may be able to detect that your answer was correct. Question four. This former New York Rangers and Boston Bruins fighter was a former competitor on Battle of the Blades figure skating competition.
Mm. Short guy. I'm going to go with PJ Stock.
Yeah, also sold adult diapers last year in a high-profile commercial. You are right. 4 for 4. Run the table, Joe.
Right. I was going to say, Merrick, we've moved from will he get to 60% now to run the table zone.
Does he run the table?
But
yeah, I bet he does.
No, he won't, because this one's going to trip him up.
All right.
I'll bet you $5 he doesn't get this one right.
You're on. My
is that a better deal for me, or no? Where's the dollar at? Now?
I'm not betting you. I'm betting my radio partner.
All right, I'll stay out of it.
$5 on this one.
This player is currently in the Florida Panthers system, but rose to infamy when he left the bench in a September 2011 preseason game and was suspended the remainder of the preseason and 5 regular season games by Brendan Shanahan. Name him.
Oh, wow.
Come on. You can do this. He left the bench and skated all the way across the ice. 5 seconds. Beeline for Mike. Beeline for Mike Duco.
3.
Yes. And it was something like an elbow. I don't even have a name. Sorry.
Damn it. $5.
$5 richer. It was JF Jacques.
Oh, come on, Joe.
Now we've moved back into the will he get to 60%
zone,
Merrick.
Yeah, sorry, Canada. Right.
By the way, I want that in Canadian dollars, just to point out that I put up American money, but you give me the bet in Canadian money, okay?
You're getting 5 frozen loonies, bud.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, bury him in the ice for good luck. This defensive forward with the Dallas Stars and the St. Louis Blues is now playing for the Orlando Solar Bears. His first name is also something many husbands receive on their birthday from their wives.
Is that BJ and the Steak Night, BJ Crombie?
Correct, Mundo, sir. By the way, I don't know if you could tell. I wrote the questions this week. This former NHL journeyman goaltender saw time with the Pittsburgh Penguins, Toronto Maple Leafs, and Los Angeles Kings. He is now playing with Pusteral Val Pusteria Wolves of the Italian Serie A league. Name him.
Well, the clue about the Italian league didn't help at all. But it's got to be. J.S. Oban?
Correctamundo. J.S. Oban.
Hey,
that's right. Part of a legacy of shitty journeyman goalies that the Kings dabbled in before settling on Jonathan Quick. This former NHL defenseman and current Montreal Canadiens assistant coach played for 10 teams during his career.
Sure did.
But you may know him as scoring the winning goal for the Philadelphia Flyers in Game 6 of the 1987 Stanley Cup Final versus Edmonton.
Oh, wow. That one.
That defense had McCrimmon, Crossman, Marsh, Howe, and...
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Defenseman, Philadelphia, 87.
Ray.
French-Canadian.
5-4. 3-2.
Prise, defenseman.
So close, but the answer we were looking for was Jean-Jacques Daigneault. You may know him better as JJ Daigneault.
JJ Daigneault. Yep. I thought that might be a former quiz.
Well, it was, and you got it wrong. A former player for the Minnesota North Stars, New York. A former player for the Minnesota North Stars and the New York Islanders that has a famous and now very wealthy son who scored a memorable goal for Team USA in the Vancouver Olympics. Name this proud papa.
He almost decapitated Joseph Kampala, the German referee, in 1972.
One might say you've already named this proud papa, actually.
Uh-huh.
Second ago.
Freeze.
There it is.
There you go. All right. And the final one. This one's a little tough. This is a toughie one. Right. Let's see. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, you got this. You got this locked up. You got this on lockdown. So this is salad time. This is bonus time. But I think, let's see if you can pull this one. This Swedish checking forward played solely with the Boston Bruins during his NHL career and only with Frölunda HC during his career in Sweden. So he's a two-team guy, the Bruins and Frölunda. Name this initialed player.
PJ Axelsson.
Joe comes correct.
That's
Joe.
Eight, right?
Yeah,
that's
man.
Eight, right?
What's the most you've ever had anyone
we've had
on
people
Game
run
Show
the
Friday?
Table, right? I was just going to ask have you, we? Have we had people run the table?
I'm sure we have.
Yeah.
On weeks that you did it.
Yeah, oh, thanks.
Jesus
Christ. Thanks, Canada.
I'm honestly. right? This is what I'm talking about. Hey, Joe, you know, usually we would have you shooting the breeze for hours on end, but we need to get out of here pretty soon. What would you like to promote or say in your time that we yield the mic to you for a little bit?
Oh, just two special people. One, Dove Millstone, a fellow MVSW listener. And and my girlfriend, she goes by her initials, JL. Shout out to JL.
All right, JL.
J-O or JL? L is in lovely or O is in ostentatious?
L is in lovely.
Okay, because your girlfriend's initials were J-O.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd necessarily go by the initials.
Yeah.
Hey, what's your Twitter, Joe? What's your Twitter handle for those that want to follow someone who got 8 out of 10 on Game Show Friday?
Yeah, really. It's underscore Joe underscore underscore 3 underscores.
Solid.
That's a lot of underscores right there.
It is.
What do you do in Toronto, Joe? What do you do in Toronto?
Oh, I work at the local YMCA. Play on a men's hockey team. Shout out to the Bees. And actually an aspiring writer, and I've got you guys to thank for that. A lot of my studying took place on the Society for International Hockey website.
Uh-oh.
Whoa.
Whoa.
I'm familiar with this organization. Very, very nice. Well, good to see that you're in good stead and good standing, Joe. Thanks for doing this, bud. You were fantastic.
Thank you, and thank you, guys. Great podcast.
No, thank
yeah,
you
beats
for
working
listening,
for a
man,
living.
And supporting the podcast. Take care.
Yeah, man. And thanks
all
right, to JL
congrats,
for tuning
congrats
in.
Congrats again,
too.
Man.
Thanks, man.
Should have known it was one of your friggin' Illuminati on the line.
Set you up, man. We're part of the hockey cult, the geek cult, the Freemasons of hockey,
who
Society for International Hockey
star,
Research.
We do.
We still have room, Wish. We accept Americans.
Conform.
We accept Americans. We do.
Drink the blood of the Kalima.
Drink the blood of Howie Morenz and join the Society of International Hockey Research.
Too soon.
He died in what, the 20s? Too soon.
Wait, can I revisit?
That was 100 years ago.
How much time do we have left on the show today, by the way? I don't hear the music.
We only got like 2 minutes or something.
All right,
like that.
Did you say, this might have just flown over my head, but did you say that Dan Hynote was better than Rocket Richard earlier in the show?
The only point that I was trying to make was,
please,
when you compare generations, like if you look at like Maurice Richard playing in, you know, when did he start? He's the wartime hockey player. Oh, that's why he padded the stats. Like 40s and 50s. If you look at like that player, and you take any player from the NHL right now and put him into that game, he will dominate. Mm. Whether you're a fourth line guy, first, doesn't matter. you would go back and dominate that game. Now, I'm talking about, you know, of course, the evolution of the game and equipment changes and players getting better and the game improving and athletes getting better at the same time. So you can't really compare it because it's chalk and cheese. But if you were just able to parachute someone into the past from the present into an NHL hockey game, that guy right now that plays in the NHL would dominate.
See, and that's exactly why I feel like when they do invent time travel, it needs to be very strictly regulated. Because if you allow people like Matt Hendricks, Tyler Kennedy, or any number of players access to this technology, they're going to go back and change the past.
And rewrite the record book.
Hey, real quick, Kevin from New Jersey on PK Subban. PK began showing up on my radar during the 2010 playoffs, namely because every single broadcaster went out of their way to point out how he was the second coming and would single-handedly bring Lord Stanley's Cup back to its rightful home anywhere in Canada. That's what I love is that he's lived up to the obscene levels of praise he's received coming into that playoff run. Sound play with the puck, seamless defensively, and a clean player with confidence and, dare I say, swagger. Even when he obliterated Adam Larsson and the Devils rookie needed to be helped off the ice, he reached out to Larsson to ensure he was okay. PK Subban. All right, brace yourself, Boston. PK Subban is class personified.
That dude's from Boston?
That dude's from Jersey, yo.
Jersey. Wow.
I know.
Sorry, Boston.
And just if anybody knows about class, it's effing Jersey. What up, class? We know about you. We got class and Camaros. Sorry.
Class and Camaros. Class, Camaros, and the situation.
That's right. Gym, tanning, laundry, class, Camaros. In that order.
All right, everybody. You know what I want to get into on the podcast on Monday, Wish? I was thinking
What's
about that? this, coming home from Sportsnet last night. Is this idea of contraction and getting rid of teams. What do you think the NHL would look like stylistically? Think about this over the weekend. I want to pick this up on Monday. How would the game itself change if you erased 10 teams? What element do you think would leave the game along with those 10 teams? I have my thoughts. Think about this over the weekend, percolate, marinate on this question. What stylistically would happen to the game if the NHL contracted by 10 teams? That's what I'll ask you on Monday.
That's your homework. Take it home.
You have homework.
Talk to your families.
Consult.
Well, and also hug your families, too. I mean, it's been kind of a shitty day. So
especially your kids, man.
Exactly.
That's what I'm going to do.
Well, thanks for indulging us in a show that hopefully provided at least some respite from today's tragic news. Again, prayers to the families in Connecticut. It's a effing unimaginable thing to go through. So if you if there's anything to pass along hockey wise as far as like any kind of support or charity efforts to the families, we'll obviously do that on Monday. And
yep,
there
absolutely.
You go. I am Greg Wyshynski, Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet again tonight. Friday Night Hockey, Junior Hockey Styles, Western Hockey League, Victoria facing off against Red Deer. I wonder if Matt Dumba is in the lineup after getting cut by Team Canada yesterday. Controversy in Canadian junior hockey. He captained the U18 team, yo. How can you cut this guy? Tune in tonight, 9:30 on Sportsnet. How's that?
Wow, that's quite a teaser. That's
thanks,
you have
man.
You have a PK Subban like handle on broadcasting.
Thank you. Yeah, I really do the carrot in front of the mule well, don't I?
There you go. All right, thanks everybody. We'll see you on Monday, and take care. Bye. Thank you.